This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. With a transition in government, oftentimes there is a shift in the leadership of many of the caucuses in each party. U.S. Representative Mark Walker was recently elected by his colleagues to serve as chairman of the Republican Study Committee of the 115th Congress. The congressman from North Carolina joined guest host Ronnie Floyd on Wednesday.
Congressman Walker, we welcome you to the Washington Watch today.
Senator Ronnie Floyd, you are one of the great beacons of light. I appreciate your work over the years, not just in Arkansas, but throughout the world. It's a privilege to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much, Congressman. Let me ask you a question. How did you come to the decision about entering into Congress, and how did two decades of ministry prepare you for that?
Well, that's a great question. I really began to think about it, pray about this, about 3.5 years ago. Had no political background, obviously. I served in business right out of college for a few years, and then spent nearly 17, 18 years working as a full-time vocational pastor. But I really began to grow more and more concerned about the direction of our country, and was really some of the vitriol that we see sometimes being used. I just thought, is there a way that we can talk about our conservative values, our conservative principles, those things that traditionally have made this country great? Was there a way to communicate those to a new community, to new people groups? And we decided to step away from the ministry, put everything that we had into it, and God provided a path. And we were able to win there in 2014, finishing up our second year here, our first term here in the United States Congress.
Well, we're excited about what you've done and what a tremendous joy it's been to be able to work with you along the way, Congressman. Recently, you were elected as the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. And we'd like for you to tell us what is the Republican Study Committee and what is its role in the United States Congress?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. About a year ago, began to think about potentially running for the position of chairman of what we call the RSC here in D.C., Republican Study Committee. Historically, in 1973, there were a group of members that felt like that we were getting away from our conservative values even nearly 50 years ago now, 45, 46 years ago, and they launched the Republican Study Committee. I believe it was at the latter part of the Nixon administration or somewhere toward the second term. And they were to be able to set aside for conservative ideology to make sure that the legislation that we were passing represented the conservative history of our country. And we've had some great chairmen in the past. In fact, Tom Price, who was recently appointed, will be appointed HH Secretary. Mike Pence was the chairman nearly a decade ago. But we're excited about making sure that whether it's the leadership or whether it's other people, to make sure that we're not filling out on some of the values and some of the things. And this really covers a wide range of topics, from religious liberty to foreign policy to entitlement reform. We are a conservative think tank, but what my goal is to try to stretch the boundary for more than just being a conservative think tank, not just the policy side, but understand what it takes to get that message across the finish line, something we call effective conservatism. We're excited about that. In fact, we've been planning a retreat today in incorporating the 3 or 5 things that we believe is important for us to tackle early on in the Republican Study Committee.
Well, that surely helps us all understand a little bit more of that. And, you know, we are very committed at FRC to be able to talk about faith and family and freedom. And you know my commitment personally to protecting religious liberty as well as all of those matters. Let me ask you this question. Can you talk a little bit further about what the Republican Study Committee and how they work together toward protecting religious liberty? Because so many of our listeners today across America are very concerned about the direction of this subject across America.
Well, and I think they should be, Ronnie. We've seen a deterioration when it comes to those being able to practice their faith, what they believe, whether it's ministers, whether it's nonprofits. In fact, when somebody asks me sometimes what's the most surprising moment that I've experienced in our first couple of years here in Washington, D.C., I go back to a night on the floor where there was an amendment that came up through the Rules Committee, but simply was to discriminate against those who hold religious values. For example, if an adoption agency chose to put a child in a home, whether there was a mother and a father, and excluded other groups, they would be literally guilty of breaking the law. They would lose nonprofit status. They would be up for other potential charges. That vote, to push it back, only passed by one vote that night. 35 Republicans voted with our friends on the left to try to target some of these religious groups. This is not something that, you know, pastors and other people that used to talk about this is what's coming. It's here now. This is happening in real time. The RSC's job is to make sure that we're getting legislation not only the House, to the Senate, to the President's desk, that's going to protect generations of people who want to continue to practice their faith and their values without having the threat of the federal government coming in with either charges or other concerns.
Now, Congressman Walker, let me talk about some of those other matters that might be on the heart of the RSC and all that you're doing. What are some of those other issues that you foresee that is going to have to be dealt with in the right manner in order to see it move toward the future in the United States?
Sure. I think the American people spoke very loudly and very clearly that the Washington as usual is no longer apropos of where we are in our country. It's one of the reasons that I ran 2 years ago. In fact, if you look across the board, even with this new class, the 115th class, Lonnie, we are seeing more veterans, more teachers, even some ministers, more business people. And no offense to my friends who represent the lawyers and attorneys, that there is certainly a role for that. But you're seeing more and more people coming from real-life positions who have families, who've been connected with their communities, to talk about the issues across the board. Some of those issues, obviously, that we feel like are very important is tax reform. For decades, Washington has promised that we would do something with tax reform. In the last 8 years, the tax code has expanded from 67,000 pages to nearly 75,000 pages. And we've seen some of our friends being targeted by the Internal Revenue Service. I believe we're at a place, hopefully at the Ways and Means, and Kevin Brady is chairman, that we're at a place now that in the year 2017 that we see real tax reform come about, hopefully, and we will see that. But certainly, without getting too much in the weeds here, we need to see the tax reform path, keeping free deductions, higher education, mortgage interest, and of course, charitable giving. We believe that's doable this year. There are some other issues as well, repealing Obamacare, but we've also got to talk about some of the non-historical Republican issues, things like immigration, women's health care, race relations. There's no reason that Republicans shouldn't be leading on these issues. If we truly believe we have the truth about individual liberty and opportunity, these are areas where Republicans and conservatives should be leading.
You can find out more about the Republican Study Committee as well as Representative Mark Walker when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at an attack on one of the most famous Christmas cartoons in America. You won't want to miss it.
Since September 11th, 2001, America has been at war. And that's about all anyone can say with certainty about a conflict that has cost 7,000 American lives and almost $2 trillion. As long as the most basic strategic questions, such as who is the enemy and what are we fighting, remain unanswered, victory is impossible. Yet this war is eminently winnable if we remove our ideological blinders and apply basic strategic principles. Our enemy is the global jihadi movement, a modern totalitarian ideology rooted in the doctrines and martial history of Islam. America has defeated totalitarian enemies before. Providing a desperately needed dose of clarity, counterterrorism expert Dr. Sebastian Gorka shows how we can do it again in a recent talk at FRC headquarters in Washington, D.C. Dr. Gorka's bracing, troubling, but ultimately encouraging lecture, entitled Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War, can be viewed at frc.org/war.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. A Texas school district says it won't budge on its decision to ban a Charlie Brown Christmas decoration from an office door. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says, not so fast. He joined guest host Ronnie Floyd on Wednesday.
Attorney General Paxton, welcome to the Washington Watch.
Hey, it's great to talk to somebody from Yoakum, Texas.
Well, thank you, my friend. Hey, we're playing for the state championship this week in Darrell Royal Stadium, in Dallas. I'm sorry, that's where we played last weekend, so we're grateful. Well, thank you so much, Attorney General. What a privilege to talk to you and to just bring our listeners on today. There was a display in question that really surrounded a 6-foot-plus tall door decoration in the main hallway of a school building. And it included a biblical reference covering much of the Dora and a photo of Linus from a Charlie Brown Christmas with these words, "For unto us is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown, Linus said. Well, the principal, Kara Trevino, reportedly said it was an issue of separation of church and state. And the claim was that Deidre Shannon, a clinic aide at Patterson Middle School in Killeen Independent School District, is forcing her personal religious beliefs on students by decorating her door in this manner. In 2013, Governor Rick Perry signed into law the Merry Christmas Bill. This bill protects school teachers and others from litigation and harassment. Now, Attorney General Paxton, your office sent a letter to the Killeen Independent School District Board of Trustees in response to their forced removal of a Christmas decoration. Could you tell our listeners today what was the essence of your letter?
Well, the essence of our letter was that we didn't feel like the staffer was violating any law, that she was perfectly within her First Amendment rights to express her views on her faith, including this Linus poster. Mm-hmm. And we also let them know we'd be willing, if they were sued by some outside anti-religious group, that we would be willing to defend them. And so that was the essence of our letter. It was very simple and to the point. And unfortunately, they went ahead and voted 6-1 to not allow this woman to put this poster up on her door.
Now, let me ask you this, sir. This is obviously breaking the law. And how is the school board breaking the law? And you may even cover just a moment the 2013 signing into law the Merry Christmas Bill, so all of our listeners will understand the context of this.
Yeah, so in 2013, the legislature passed what we call the Merry Christmas Law, which was really designed to further protect people's First Amendment rights. But the reality is, under the Texas Constitution and the federal Constitution, you know, school teachers and students do not, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, leave their constitutional right to express their views at the gatehouse, at the doorhouse, at the schoolhouse. So That's why we're interested in this case. And unfortunately, the school board made, we think, a poor decision. And as I understand it, a lawsuit has already been filed by by Texas Values half of this woman. And it's our intention to intervene in that case and file on behalf of Texas to protect constitutional rights.
You know, it's just really amazing, isn't it, how many times the phrase separation of church and state appears in the conversations along the way in the country, but yet it's found nowhere in the Constitution. Why do you think that is used so much to attack religious liberty across America?
Well, it's a convenient use of words that Jefferson used in a letter to a Baptist church in Virginia, but it certainly he certainly had no intention of stopping people from exercising their First Amendment rights. And look, he was obviously part of putting our constitutional documents together, and what they put down in words was very different than this idea of separation of church and state. They put down that there couldn't be an establishment of a church or a religion by a state. But it also very carefully laid out the idea that people had a right to express their personal religious views and that the government could not stop them.
Are you encouraged with the direction of what you see happening in the nation today about matters like religious liberty? Do you think people are beginning to stand up and say enough is enough or are you discouraged? Talk to our viewers about the way you see it from the state where you dwell, as well as what you see happening across America.
Well, we certainly see attacks on religious liberty on a fairly regular basis, whether it was our cheerleaders in Kuntz who were told they couldn't have banners at a football game with Bible verses on them, or whether it's this woman who, just in the last week, put the Linus poster up. So what I am encouraged is that people are starting to understand that they do have the right. They do have rights to express their religious views, and they are willing to stand up and fight for them. So I applaud this woman who is willing to probably some risk to her job to stand up and say, no, these are my rights, and I'm going to stand up and fight for them. So that, to me, is what makes the difference. People willing to stand up and have the courage not to just walk away, but say, I will take the risk because it's worth it, not just for me, but for our country.
Since that interview with Ken Paxson on Wednesday, a Texas judge has actually ruled on this issue. On Thursday, a Bell County judge issued a ruling that a Christmas poster in Killeen, Texas could be placed back on the door. Despite the fact that there was public unanimous support for Ms. Shannon's poster, the Killeen Independent School District Board voted Tuesday night 6-1 to enforce the ban on the Charlie Brown Christmas poster that references the religious history of Christmas. The judge's ruling stated that Ms. Shannon may put up her Christmas poster with the additional wording, quote, Ms. Shannon's Christmas message, end quote. This is a great win for religious liberty. For more about this story, let me encourage you to visit the website tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be back with the governor of Texas to talk about a new cabinet position that's been filled. That's coming up on the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. This past week, President-elect Donald Trump selected former Texas Governor Rick Perry to be his energy secretary. On Thursday of this week, current Texas Governor Greg Abbott joined guest host Ronnie Floyd to talk about his predecessor's selection.
Governor Abbott, thank you for being on the Washington Watch.
It's my pleasure. Great to be with you.
Well, it's a wonderful experience to have you, Governor. I am a Texan by birth and was raised there in high school, all the way to high school, college, and then postgraduate work. But it's great to talk with you today. And based upon what Rick Perry did as governor of Texas, a big energy state, what does that tell us about what his vision may be for the future of America as he leads the Department of Energy in Washington?
Well, Governor Perry's vision is going to be able to execute what the priorities of President-elect Trump are. Before I became governor, I was the attorney general in the state of Texas for 12 years. In my capacity as attorney general, that is how I got to know now attorney general Scott Pruitt in Oklahoma, but also as attorney general in Texas, I served side by side with Governor Perry. And I got to see firsthand the principles and the vision and the ability to run a large state and to execute on plans that Governor Perry had. And I can tell you that Governor Perry will execute President-elect Trump's vision to make America an energy-independent nation. Mm-hmm. He will do across America what he did in the state of Texas, and that has helped create millions of new jobs. And he will do that while at the very same time protecting clean air and clean water, just like he did in Texas.
That's wonderful, Governor. Thank you for that testimonial about Rick Perry, whom we all have great respect for and appreciate his service to our nation. Also, Governor, as you look and think about the various cabinet picks that are taking place, and you're observing this from the state of Texas, but I'm sure that you have been involved directly and indirectly to some degree, but What do you think about the other picks that are going on? You have any thoughts as governor looking at that, and are you encouraged with what you're seeing?
It really is amazing because you see in President-elect Trump a chief executive who is choosing other chief executives and generals and leaders, people of tremendous accomplishments. So there's one thing that stands out, and that is every single person he is choosing is a person of tremendous accomplishments. And so he's putting the very best into the cabinet who will assist the president in running the future of this country, and it promises to be a very bright future.
Governor, when I know that you mentioned that you got to know Scott Pruitt, who is the Attorney General of Oklahoma, and as you well know, the Environmental Protection Agency is a pretty challenging situation today in America. In fact, President-elect Trump said the EPA has pursued an out-of-control anti-energy agenda that has destroyed millions of jobs, and Pruitt will reverse this trend and restore the EPA's essential mission of keeping out our air and our water clean and safe. My question is, what are your thoughts about Scott Pruitt from your relationship and how you have observed him as the Attorney General of Oklahoma, and in relationship also to this new assignment that he may have the opportunity to serve his country?
Well, I know Scott Pruitt personally. I know him behind the scenes. I know him as he focuses on challenges that he faces, and together we fought side by side in challenges against the EPA. And here's what I can tell you about Scott Pruitt. He knows the law, and he follows the law. And what he was committed to doing was fighting back against a lawless EPA that was refusing to abide by the law, that was making up the rules as they went along. And as a result, farmers and small businesses and ranchers were being crushed by this lawless regime under the EPA. And so it is necessary that we get someone like Scott Pruitt, who's not going to invent the law or make it up. He's going to apply the law as it is supposed to be governed by the Environmental Protection Agency, and hence restore jobs in this nation, but also restore the rule of law in this nation.
Well, the things that I hear from about him are excellent. I never had the opportunity to meet him personally, but what I hear from his pastor and many of his friends in the state of Oklahoma and others across the nation, he is obviously a man of deep conviction, very committed to law and order. He's a man where it places faith as his number one priority in his life, and he's just trying to be obedient and serve his nation as God has opened up this door. There's obviously a lot of kickback relating to that. Now, part of that is simply because the EPA is perhaps not getting someone that they're used to that would forward their agenda. But what would you tell perhaps people in the midstream, those who are more centrist, or even some evangelicals or other faiths about Scott, and that this is a great choice for America? Could you try to bring some balance to the attacks against Attorney General Scott Pruitt?
Well, as someone like myself who knows him personally and behind the scenes, I can tell you he is a man of tremendous character, tremendous faith, puts deep reliance upon his faith in God to guide him in his work. But he's a person who cares about this nation and the future of this nation and the fundamental principles upon which this nation was built. And he wants to restore those principles in the branch of government that he will be operating in.
Well, Governor, tell us about, for example, when EPA would bring about some regulation, what that does to harm the energy issue or some economic issues in the country. Can you give us an example or just talk about it for a moment? Because I really want Americans today to understand the practical side of this and what your challenges have been as leaders in our nation with the EPA as it is today.
Right. Listen, there are some regulations that are issued, could be by Washington, D.C., or by your local capital, wherever it is that you may live. And most of those are issued because the legislature or Congress made a law that said that the agency can issue the regulation. The EPA didn't do that. What the EPA did instead is, even though there was no law by Congress authorizing them to come up with a regulation, the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., following their own agenda, as opposed to what Congress allowed them to do, these bureaucrats decided that they would impose the types of regulations that would further a leftist agenda and in doing so would crush the jobs of middle-class Americans, those who are working every single day just to make a living, doing their best to follow the law, get the hammer from the federal government, crushing their dreams and crushing their ability to make a living. But that's especially true for the farmers and ranchers in this country who live off the land. Let me tell you, these farmers and ranchers, they care more about conservation and taking care of their land than any bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. And Scott Pruitt is a supporter of men and women who believe in God, who believe in the land and private property rights, but get frustrated when the federal government tramples those property rights.
So as you're out here in this process, Governor, watching all this unfold and your conversations perhaps with Attorney General Pruitt, what would you tell him at this time? If you could encourage him in any way, what would you tell him to keep the faith, to keep the agenda forward? What would you tell him as a governor and a friend of his?
Well, as his friend, I would just remind him of that all he needs to do is to be himself and stand on what got him to where he is now, and that is reliance upon God and his reliance upon the rule of law. These are core principles that Americans want to see upheld, but also understanding the plight of the middle-class America, those who have been harmed and those have been beaten down by Washington, D.C. bureaucrats who are more interested in regulating their lives as opposed to empowering their freedom. Scott Pruitt is a man who believes in the power of the liberty that is inherent in the United States Constitution, and he's going to fight for that liberty against what has been an overreaching federal government. Scott Pruitt will be part of fulfilling President Trump's vision to create more jobs and to peel back the layers of the federal government that are trying to run too much of your lives.
If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to it by heading over to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.